Completely, exactly, and precisely, just like you. It was as if a part of me expected your faces, those eyes, all along. You have filled up my days with spark and purpose. No matter how much work there is to be done, I always feel a bit down when I'm staring at your backs as you leave to catch the school bus, or when I see your sweet faces as you wave to me from the window as the bus rumbles by. And my heart floats when I hear the familiar sounds of the screen door swinging open, a backpack dropping to the floor, and sneakers or flip-flops or snow boots getting kicked off. Of course, I tell you those things must be put away immediately and in the right places because we're not animals. But no, my first emotion is gratitude that you are home, that you are with me, again and again and again. I wonder how I will do when those sounds of doors opening and bags dropping are as infrequent as to require an actual holiday. You are the ears, the MASH-era radar ears that can't hear me tell you to turn the TV off but can hear sirens from across town. Yours are the ears that hear music, save it into the hard drive of your brain, and allow it to come out of your fingers when you sit down at the piano later and play it all back. Yours are the ears that we looked at suspiciously when you were a baby. You had that one small round bump right near the opening of your ear. 13 years later, it's still there. It has done nothing to harm you, and when I see it, just like your particular raised eyebrows, it reminds me you were once that small little baby who could fit neatly into the curve of my arm. Sometimes I crook my arm and trace an oval shape within it and say, "Baby Walker used to fit right here." And you always tell me to stop, but I know there is a part of you that loves it. It is the part we all have inside of us. It's the part that wants to remain small and cared for. You fill up our house with sound, piano and the radio. "Mom, listen to this," as you read me something from your books, whether I'm listening or not. There is a small Nerf basketball tossed into that hoop over your closet door and your mouse Oats squeaky wheel that kicks in right around bedtime. There is giggling and fighting, hair drying, and the loudest singing in the shower I have ever heard in my life. Sometimes it's overwhelming, all of these stations coming in on the same frequency, and I jam my middle fingers into my ears while I'm trying to draft an email or just think a thought. So that first day of school after summer vacation? Although I have been waiting for it, and I am ready, the silence almost breaks me. I can't believe it's only 9:45, 10:15, 11:30, noon. I worry about what I will do with that silence when you both are grown. What will I do with that? Is it payback for me shushing you and waving my hands at you when I was on a work call and that, "No, no, no, oh my God, go away," way that I did? Is this the slow burn? I wish I could deposit those sounds in a bank to take out when everything is too quiet, when I'm traveling away from home, when I'm down. I would withdraw the sounds of you both running down the beach in Maine under the moonlight with sparklers, and I would withdraw you telling me the dream you had about a unicorn when you were three. I would withdraw you calling me Mama, because it's already been years since you've called me that, and I would withdraw every single time you unabashedly whispered to me that you love me, will love me forever, and will live with me always. I would withdraw every time you asked and begged for my attention to look at a plane, a truck, a police car, a train, a ferry, a lobster boat, a snowplow, an excavator, a cement mixer, a helicopter, a tractor-trailer truck, a car, an ambulance, a fire truck. You wanted my attention so much, all the time, and I didn't always give it to you. I would withdraw the milk-drunk lip smacks and the kitty cat cries. I would withdraw the sounds your mouth made when you were a toddler and you were talking and breathing through it constantly, huffy and puffy. I would withdraw all those and then some to deposit back in my heart, to remind myself my life was full of sound and I cursed it. I wondered when I would have silence and time to think. I would remind myself this silence is what I thought I wanted. You both hum. So did your great-grandmother. It's a trait I had completely forgotten about until I was in a thrift store one afternoon and heard the elderly lady who volunteered there humming away. A light and lilting da-da-di-da-da-da, as she arranged and rearranged. In this stranger, I heard my grandmother's voice again. And when you hum, I feel like you are having a conversation with her. It brings her close, I hope you never stop humming. You are the metronome, the tick-tock that has always been inside you. You hear rhythms in your head, you play them on the kitchen counter, the floor, you click-cluck them with your mouth. You used to get in trouble for that in class. They had to create strategies for you to stop. You are older now, and instead of strategies, you have peers. They're the ones who comment now about all those sounds you make. This has been described as disruptive in the past. It's taken me all this time to think, yeah, maybe disruptive is exactly what it is. You should always strive to be disruptive in this world. Fitting in and doing what is expected only leads us to be good, little, middle-of-the-road humans. Yuck. You are the gentle heart and the scientist, the dreamer and the realist. 4 years ago, one of the worst fights you got in that whole summer was over the fate of a cricket. There were so many crickets in our backyard. We heard them all summer, chirping to one another. One had become entangled in a spider web, and Walker wanted to watch the spider eat the cricket. He understood the food chain and predators and prey. This was how life worked. This was how all life worked, really. But Hawthorne wanted to save the cricket. The mere thought of sitting there and observing another creature being killed and eaten felt so morally wrong as to actually be insane. I raced from the house when I heard the explosion of shrieking, shouting, and tears. Surely someone had been hurt, a stick to the head. Something. Instead, you stood in front of me with those big blue eyes and tearfully explained that the cricket had just been leading its cricket life. It had not been bothering anyone. It was just going about his cricket business. You explained it deserved to be saved. It deserved to live. Just like we all deserve to live. What if its family was worried about him? But by then it was too late for the cricket. It was the angriest you've ever been with your brother. You felt utterly betrayed. It was as if you realized someone you loved with everything you had was, in reality, an actual monster. I understood both of your arguments. I was on both your sides. Most mothers are the worst kind of mothers, the non-side takers. There are so many sides now. I used to think the world was like a box, with a finite number of sides and angles. Then you guys showed up, started growing up and disagreeing and branching out into the original and weird and lovely human beings you are, and I came to accept instead that it's a faceted world, with infinite planes and endless reflections. I know each of you as well as I can ever hope to know anyone. And so I absorb your anguish. I understand your arguments, and I want to be on your sides, both of you. But mostly, in those moments when all hell is breaking loose, I soften to the point of collapse when I realize there are still souls in this ugly world who care so very much about the fate of a cricket. You were born a team. You will need to continuously search, with sincerity, with love, with good intentions, for the side you can both always be on. You have sharp minds and good hearts, so I trust you will be able to do this. Please do this for me. Historical evidence suggests it is possible. You've always had a connection others have commented on. You get along so well. You play together so well. You genuinely seem to like each other. That's what they'd say. Of course, you are like all siblings, and there are power struggles and tattling and smacking and betrayal. I understand everything is changing at a rapid pace for you right now. You're entering big, scary, exciting phases in your lives. But you still make each other laugh. Hard. You understand each other so well that if we're in a bookstore, you can each find a book the other might enjoy, and you'll be right. And you love each other with everything you've got. Most important, you have each other's backs. I hope you always, always will. Long after your father and I are gone. You are all the change I feel in my own life, the change I'm not sure I'm ready for. But here it comes, ready or not. The other day, Walker wanted to play a game you guys had invented when you were little. Walker is obsessed with trucks. Hawthorne is obsessed with animals. And the game you invented is called Tranimal Day. Granted, the naming could use some work. Mostly it consists of animals riding around in trucks. Pretty straightforward as games go. You have played it for years, and you would play it for hours. Sometimes it could easily take up half the day. I always thought of that game as the ultimate expression of your connection, of you understanding what makes the other tick while also getting exactly what you wanted for yourselves. I felt proud of that game in the typical way parents feel proud of something they had exactly nothing to do with. You have played this game less frequently over the years, and it's not like I expected you to come home from college and play it or anything. But when Walker wanted to play it this past week and you said no, you didn't want to play that game anymore. You just weren't into it anymore. It was for little kids. It was silly. Well, I'm pretty sure both my heart and Walker's heart broke at the exact same time. I think I even said something in a slightly desperate tone like, "Are you sure? Oh, you should play it. You used to love that game." When really what I wanted to say is, "How can you be outgrowing things like this? Silly things. Things I hadn't thought about but which suddenly mean the world to me without at least giving me a heads up. How can you go about this business of getting older without so much as a second thought when I am at least on my 39th thought about it? I'm not ready. Why are you ready?" "I've spent so much time thinking about your firsts, I haven't thought so much about your lasts. It's hard for me to imagine you'll never play that game together again, not even once. But this is the process, I guess. Such a stupid process. You are the ghosts. I see you in strangers and strange scenarios, in new landscapes you've never seen, and in people you've never met. I find you. I see your arched brow or your giggle. I see the things you love, and they make me think of you. You were with me when I saw horses crowded along the fence line of a pasture in Oregon, and I went 3 miles out of my way to turn around and go back. I couldn't just keep driving away from those horses. I knew you would love to see a picture of them. You are with me when I'm on a plane, and as I'm getting close to landing at a bigger airport than ours back in Vermont, I peek down and see the FedEx hangar with all those planes gathered around like piglets at their mama's teats. I think about how almost every morning when I used to drive you to school when you were little, we'd see that one single FedEx plane coming in for a landing every morning at 7:35. The regularity of it was comforting, like an alarm clock confirming we were already awake and on our way. One time I saw a youth choir perform at a Christmas party, and there was a boy singing who was probably 3 years older than you. He was the teenage you, right down to the glasses and body type. I felt like I was standing 12 feet away from the future you, and I slowly sipped my glass of wine and tried not to cry. I see you everywhere. You are with me wherever I go. You are everything I didn't know I needed, in the many specific and unexpected ways I've come to need you, and now I cannot imagine the arc of my life without you. You have already forgiven me 1,000 times over and loved me through my faults and impatience, my grouchiness and bad cooking. You are all the joy I can hold, and gratefully more than can sometimes be contained. I can feel you both growing away from me, and of course, that's how this thing works. So when you hold my hand or let me touch your hair, I notice. Randomly and oddly enough, I often think of what Blythe Danner said during her portrait session with her daughter, Gwyneth Paltrow. Annie Leibovitz relayed her words. She had said she really hadn't been able to hold her daughter like that since she was a little girl. I read that quote years before I would become a mother, and I have never forgotten it. Some part of me knew already how close we would be and then how we would necessarily move away from one another. I realize now I have already held you as closely and tightly and freely as I ever will, that all of that is already over. It hardly seems fair. It hardly seems like enough. It wasn't enough. And now here we are. With each spin around the sun, you move further away from me until, one day, you are loose in the world and our fingers and arms no longer touch. You weren't born to be children, always, always mine. You were born to be people, out in the world. I can't hold both of you to me until the end of time. It's unfair to all of us. What exactly would the point of that be, anyway? And I can't hold your hands all along the way. Your hands must be free and open to hold other hands. Your friends and lovers, your own children, maybe, one day. You are all the joy this life has brought me, in two original packages. I've attempted to pour into you what I've learned, but I know that will only get you so far. You will need to do and see, feel and hear. You will need to make mistakes, big and small. You will need to feel the utter insult of other people's carelessness and callousness, You will need to understand that people you love and trust more than they deserve will go on to break your heart. Honestly, I'm still trying to understand that myself. You are all the joy I hope to absorb and observe, love and learn from in the years and decades to come. I've given myself over to you both in ways you will never know. And that's okay. That's what mothers do. I hope you will fall in love with yourselves, with your lives, with only the people who truly deserve you. And I am beyond words and thoughts and thank yous that you are mine. My perfectly imperfect children. When I die. When I die, hug each other with force until no one wants to be the first to let go. I let go first a lot. I can tell you now, I regret it. Look into each other's eyes and pretend I am looking into them too. Sometimes I had trouble with that. Know that I was lucky and loved far beyond what I deserved. Know that I loved you. Or as my friend Dave Spencer, who is already dead, once said, I love you all. You're amazing. Except for the few of you who suck, but even you have your endearing qualities. If my children are still quite young when I die, do not tell them to honor me with forced smiles. This is no celebration of life. Not yet. Do not ask them to mind their manners, to say thank you when someone says, we're so sorry about your mother. Life has betrayed them. Let them lie down on the ground and kick and scream. Let them rage like wild animals, gnashing their teeth at the unfairness. Let them retreat and close up like a morning glory after the sun has gone down. It's what we all want to do when someone we love dies anyway. And wait. Do not plan a funeral or any other thing that would take away from what they need. Circle the motherfucking wagons. Be there for them. Surround them relentlessly with love. Make Mother's Day something they won't dread for the rest of their lives. I don't know how you'll do it, but do it. Take them to the beach on my birthday and listen to the waves, watch the seagulls grift and swoop. Read books with them and tell them there were so many more books she wanted to read. Read all those books. Talk to them about the things that are happening now that you thought I would have liked very much. Tell them I loved them. I will love them always. Tell them that I'm so sorry I left them. What kind of mother does that? The worst kind. The kind made from flesh and blood and bone. When they are ready. When they feel like they could dance and laugh and do the same party tricks with coins that they did at their great-grandmother's wake. Throw me a party. A big one, but nothing too expensive. The previously alive me loved an open bar and a reason to dress up. Do those two things. I don't care if you serve food. As many of you know, I couldn't feed myself at parties to save my life, so to speak. If you want to truly replicate how I lived, serve mac and cheese at 2 a.m. and make everyone eat it straight from the pan. If you toast me, whatever you do, raise your glass with a, here's looking up your old address. Henry Blake delivered this toast, and the only way it could have been better is if Hawkeye delivered it instead. But beggars can't be choosers, especially beggars who are dead. Tell stories about me, but don't humiliate me. I lived my whole life in fear of humiliation. What you thought of as snobbery or shyness or a reluctance to play volleyball? I just didn't want to be embarrassed. So don't embarrass me. I might be dead, but I feel confident this particular fear will live on. I cared very much how I looked in photos. But I'm dead now, so I guess you can choose the photos that you like. I have no more opinions to give. Choose the photos that show how you remember me and how you'll think of me. Show my kids who I was apart from the person who nagged them to clip their wolfen toenails and lost her temper over the most petty nonsense. Assuming I haven't been smashed by a giant boulder or burned to a crisp, wash my body if you can get through it. If I ever took care of you, please take care of me this one last time. Please don't let a stranger do it. It's just a body. Don't be scared. It loved and lost. It nourished and disappointed. You'll see that my dead person's skin isn't so different from your alive person's skin, and these arms and hands that stiffen are still the same. They do not turn to scales. They're not the arms of a swamp monster. You always said I had cold hands, And, well, at least this part should be consistent. Kiss my forehead one more time. I don't know what it's like to be dead, but I would bet my earthly possessions, that are all yours now anyway, that forehead kisses still register. Clip my hair. Save its strands. You might not want them now, you might not want them later. But somewhere down the road I have faith that a descendant will marvel at her great-great-great-grandmother's brown-gray hair and realize that it's so very much like his or her own. We are a brown hair family, full stop. If, in between tears, you are not making inappropriate jokes, then how can you claim to have ever loved me? What's wrong with you? Get out! I mean it. Just kidding. See? When I die, throw me by the fistfuls into the ocean. I prefer the unforgiving slate-gray waters of Maine, but it's not a deal-breaker. It will matter more to you than it will to me. My ashes, like ghostly silt, will cling to your fingertips and float on the surface of the water. You might mistake this for my reluctance to leave, but I am already gone. Maybe give some of my ashes to my enemies. It'll bring them joy knowing I'm gone for good. They can do something petty like flush me down the toilet. Dicks. I worried a lot when I was alive. So when I die, take comfort that I'm no longer worrying about these things. Am I a good enough mother? Am I good enough, period? Why can't I be more generous with people who love me? Am I crazy? Like crazy crazy? Are my kids okay? Will my kids always be okay? I wonder if I just have regular dandruff, or it's some kind of serious skin condition that I can't seem to ask a doctor about ever. Should I have wanted a bigger family? Should I have been such a whore in my 20s? Should I have been more of a whore in my 20s? Who the president is? What's wrong with the world? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with everybody? How I'm going to die? When I'm going to die? I can't believe I'm going to die. I'm no longer worrying about anything. I'm no longer here. Where has the feeling gone? The show must go on. This is Gabra Zachman. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Amateur Hour, Motherhood in Essays and Swear Words by Kimberly Harrington. This program was produced by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Copyright 2018 by Kimberly Harrington. Production Copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.